if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, men will still say this was their finest hour.
We stand for Queen, Country, and Video Games. BRB UK. Worse teeth, better accents.
Hello and indeed ahoy hoy, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 300-35, or episode 265, as people without arithmetic gymnastics in their brain, well, I make it sound like that was fancy, was just subtraction, it's episode 265 of BRB UK. I am Dan, one of your hosts. How are you? Good.
Good.
Timothy is over there. He's having a stroke because I just did subtraction in the intro.
Yeah, there's... I guess that's the most subtractive intro you've ever given us, but, you know.
Well, you know.
Yeah, okay, that's good.
Well, why not? Well, thanks. Great comment there, Tim.
Yeah, all good.
And now moving on to our to our colleague in the field. It's Coleman. He's on site.
Hi.
He's on site at Tim's house. How is the situation developing there, Coleman?
I've gone from going to having no sleep to having overslept. So
excellent.
It's a nice, variable pick and nick mix of my own tiredness.
And if you can hear explosions in the background, it's not the fact that I'm in war-torn Slough. It's Diwali tonight, and a lot of people letting off fireworks.
Oh crap!
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm so glad I don't record in the attic studio anymore.
Anyway, a lot of news this week, I have to say.
Not news!
What a happy time for news.
Really
such
terrible news.
Happy news.
Well, do you want to start with happy news? Do you want to start with vaguely happy news? And then we can gently...
No, let's just start off with all the BS.
Let's get the bad stuff out of the way.
You want to get straight in there without KYs, what you're saying.
We'll work our way up to the nice news.
You're going
to
ram it home. Just get in there, get stuck in, all right.
I'm not sure that's helping the situation, your analogy, whatever the hell it is there.
My analogy involving KY jelly and lard?
Yeah, that's really, no. Like, this news is bad enough on its own without lard or any references to insertions.
Well, lard is a useful option for those who are budget conscious in these times of austerity, just saying.
That is some good public service announcement going on there, Dan.
Anytime, Tim. Anytime. Suet, on the other hand, doesn't work as
well.
Anyway, talking of such skullduggery, EA.
EA
has nailed another developer scalp to the wall. Poor old Visceral Games, those wonderful peeps behind the Dead Space series, which I really liked back in the day.
Yes, you and lots of other people's.
Of late, not so much good stuff, the likes of Battlefield Hardline, but we'll forgive them. They have now...
They might have been forced into that situation with the Battlefield Hardline by the sounds of things as well. No?
Also, don't forget the PR poop show that was Dante's Inferno.
Yes. So basically, I'm just going to remember the good old days and go Dead Space Trilogy. Or Dead Space 1 and 2, maybe.
See, everyone talks badly of Dead Space 3, but I still maintain to this day that I can see how people thought that the co-op didn't fit in with the game. Again, something that a lot of people accused EA of forcing them to do. And the microtransactions got a lot of bad publicity and left a bad taste in people's mouths. But I still maintain that that game, like... It wasn't a bad game in itself, and if I'd have paid for any of the microtransactions, I that would have subtracted from the game experience for me. Also, if you didn't like the co-op, don't bloody play it in co-op. Problem solved, kind of thing. I mean, but yeah, I still think that all three were high quality games, and it's just the third one left a slight bad taste in people's mouths. Basically,
well, thank you for that useful diversion there, Tim. That'll help the flow of time. But just to give you a little bit of
the flow of time
of background, other scalps on the wall of EA.
Oh God, yeah, it's a long list.
Maxis,
mm-hmm.
Bullfrog, Origin. Westwood,
yeah.
DreamWorks
Westwood.
Interactive. Yes, they single-handedly took down the one-man powerhouse, the powerhouse of music, and who just happens to be a vicar's son, which is the most rock and roll
to
you can
me,
be.
A few of those studios, I have to admit, I've completely forgotten anything they've ever done. No disrespect to the people that have gone there, but the other one that was a big one for me was Pandemic as well.
Like, yeah, Pandemic, Playfish, and Black Box Games.
Yeah, oh, Black Box as well. God, I forgot.
So, yet, I mean, I don't think people been actually jettisoned, or have they actually just been moved around to other EA subsidiaries?
Well, this is the thing that's a bit up in the air at the moment. EA have come out, or Patrick Söderlund has come out and stated that they basically are trying to find positions for everyone within the company. There's no real news as to who within the company that might be, you know, kind of commenting on, and you know whether I don't know what the situation is with that. I think by American law they have to provide an alternative where possible,
right?
But how viable that alternative has to be, I don't know. Like, if it's, you know, oh yeah, you can go work in Canada with BioWare, or you know, like, how, like, exactly, you know, what qualifies that as a
EA North Pole Studios.
Be a toilet supplies reconfiguration executive.
I don't think it's Konami, mate.
Oh,
but,
right.
I mean, this for me was sad from a perspective of what they've done before, but I cannot think of another game that I was excited about that was in production other than their untitled Star Wars game that was being headed up by, or at least worked on by, Amy Hennig.
Yeah, because that's the other big news that comes with this. Originally, the news was kind of buried in the blog announcement from Patrick Söderlund, that the announcement was, hey, the Star Wars game, we took a look at it, and it was a narrative single-player story-driven game, and, we don't want that. We want to make it like a life game for people. You know, we want to make it a big experience, a big Star Wars experience, which to everyone and their mother's opinion seems to be, let's make a Destiny game.
Yeah, a lot of people are saying they want a Star Wars Destiny that they can slap a load of microtransactions in, and they can't do that as easily with a single player game. There has been a bit of pushback on that. There has been, since this announcement came out, there has been a few journalists I trust, I can't remember off the top of my head who it was, other than giving them a shout out, but there was
Piers
a couple
Morgan.
Of people that have come out, not shit journalists and shit lord people, actual people I trust, but yeah, people that came out and said, I think one of them was Jason Squire, I think, anyway, but they came out and said, from what they've heard, you know, on the grapevine type thing, it wasn't because it was a single player game that it got canned. Mm. It seems like it may have been a quality of what was there and delivery time type of problem, rather than the type of game that it was necessarily.
So okay. Now it's gone to EA Vancouver.
Okay.
And I do wonder, there is a big Destiny type game coming from EA, from BioWare specifically.
There is, Anthem.
Oh yes, I forgot about that.
Yeah, so what's going to happen to Anthem, do you think?
Which I'm really looking forward to, by the way.
Yeah. That's possibly one of the other games I'm most looking forward to.
Also, means the release date's been pushed back, because the release window was the end of the fiscal year next year, which would be around March, I believe. And that's been pushed back to the end of the fiscal year 2021.
Whoa!
Yeah.
I'll be 41 then.
I don't actually think that's even definite. They haven't specified a window that's been pushed back.
That won't be their release date.
It's gone past 2019. That's all we actually know at this stage, basically. But that is not good news in itself, and it sounds like they're taking the whole thing back to the drawing board.
Well, they say from what the blog suggests is that they're taking the all the elements of the game, you know, textures and that type of thing, basically. But they could be moving that to a new engine, who knows?
Yeah, but it does sound like they're almost starting from scratch, from reading between the lines type thing. Mm. But I don't know, the saving grace to this will be if Amy Hennig and some of the other people that are attached to the project go on. Because it wasn't, I mean, Amy Hennig's the one that gets talked about the most, but there was also Jade Raymond, who was attached to the project, and Kim Swift of X-Portal fame as well. So,
and I've forgotten the voice actor's name, but the one who was originally meant to be Drake's brother, Sam, in Uncharted 4, before he got replaced with Troy Baker. Because they completely changed that story element, it seems. Yeah, it's weird. They've not said if Amy Hennig's attached. They've said they reached out to her. So
please.
We don't know what's going on there. If they want it, you know, would she really want to be on a Destiny-like Star Wars game as opposed to an Uncharted-like Star Wars game?
Yeah, well, I mean, so it kind of does move her, and this is a bit harsh, but it's a game that's a little bit out of her established skill set. It's not to say that she couldn't do it, it's just a bit outside of her pedigree, that's all.
Yeah, I think she could still lend enough skills to it from, you know, what she knows and what she's done before that she,
yeah.
she could have a positive contribution to, you know, the outcome type thing.
Although I kind of do wonder how much of a it would have felt like an Uncharted reskin if you're just playing, you know, playing the cheeky bounty hunter in space. Well, you're stealing things, but it's all for the greater good.
But I was perfectly happy with that. That was a winning formula for me. Like, that would have been excellent.
I am being devil's advocate here, but you know what I mean. Would it have just been Uncharted in space?
Yeah, to me, that would have been freaking excellent. Can you imagine the set piece stuff that you could have done within that universe and stuff like that? That would have just been fantastic.
As well, the other kind of kick in the balls about this is that, you know, this Star Wars game was meant to be like the kind of successor to the cancelled Star Wars 13
scene.
So now we've got one cancelled, one retooled game so far.
Yeah, and it just seems that any Star Wars game that I get massively invested in is destined to be... And
yeah,
unfortunately,
you were meant to be the chosen one. You were supposed to bring balance to the force,
not the younglings.
That's what we call microtransactions.
Anywho, talking microtransactions.
Oh no.
Uh-oh.
Talking of microtransactions. Now, I'm just going to throw a company name out here. I'm just throwing a company name out here. All right, okay, Activision. All right,
top guys. Top. Guys.
Like, yeah, they love money, big or small. And apparently there is a patent that has just been granted as of, well, 2 days ago as we're recording, about a new microtransaction system.
Yes.
Now, this is a system, its unique properties are, which allows it to be patented. It's a system and method that drives microtransactions in multiplayer video games. And the paint outlines, basically the system is that players get matched together in such a way that it would encourage the purchase of in-game content. So it might match someone who's pimped out with horse armor with someone who has no horse armor, thereby inciting jealousy and envy, and then making them go and buy a whole load of things. You know, it's, you know, I can kind of, from a really cold-hearted business perspective, it's a good way to generate revenue. Morally, however, it's as pretty much bereft as you can get.
But it's also, it's not just that. It's not just the lack of morals in doing it and the straight-up businessy decision nature of it. For me, the thing that really screams out for me and the thing that sets alarm bells off is it's actually... It's the complete opposite to being for the gamer and for gameplay. Like it's actually in the kind of direct opposition to what matchmaking should fundamentally be doing. It should fundamentally match you with people that are at your level so that you can feel equal and feel like that, you know, it's not unfairly weighted by things that have been bought. And this goes exactly against that.
I mean, the first bit of the extract from this patent makes it sound like it might just be, you know, horse armor, but it then goes on to say the system can also match players to encourage microtransactions in other ways, including dropping a player into a match where a specific in-game purchase would prove to be especially useful. Now that is starting to border on paying to win, which is a really, really dodgy aspect to this. And this, you know, very much sounds like the thin end of the wedge. I mean, Activision have said in defense this was, you know, basically something out their R&D office. It hasn't been implemented in game, but
right, but they didn't say it won't be implemented in game, which is one of the key factors.
They're never going to say that, are they?
Yeah, but that's where this gets shady. Like, you can deny that it's been in something so far, but that to me screams out that you're still possibly planning on using it, which is not good. We should point out, as you said, this was from 2015, so it's only just surfaced because it had been reported by Glixel as well, basically. But
now,
yeah,
I'm just going to put this out there.
Yeah.
If this was implemented in a free-to-play game, how would you feel?
I still think it's shady because it's, as I said, it's the antithesis of matchmaking. It should be doing the exact opposite of what this is doing to and and it's solely doing it to encourage purchases. Like, that's not...
And if it was in a paid-for game, a quote-unquote full-price product?
Then that is complete and utter horse as far as I'm concerned.
The horse like armor, this. Tim. Horse armor.
Just, horse armor, sorry.
Just on my own kind of point of view, yeah, I don't like microtransactions in AAA games that you have to pay full price for. I've gone over this again and again and again. If it wasn't a free-to-play game, it depends. If it was a... Take a say like a MOBA or an MMO that has started charging and then people have gone into that and then at some point they've gone, oh, it's free to play now. If they suddenly implemented this system, I'd be really annoyed. If it was a straight up free to play as it came out, wouldn't really care. Probably a good chance I'm not playing it anyway. I think the free to play market is the kind of wild west where you can start. Well, that's where you should be looking at these microtransactions.
Right, but even in a free to play game, if they did this,
saying from my own view. But
in a free to play game, when you're playing the game, you're just starting out and you've just started playing, and you come up against a player that's bought the most expensive weapon in the game that costs like £100.
Well, after I finished laughing at him, I'd uninstall the game and stop playing.
Exactly.
That's not my problem.
But that's the thing. It discourages new players from wanting to play the game. And I don't understand the short-sightedness of the idea of seeing it, basically.
Well, I mean, one thing that... you know, is getting a lot of traction in game development these days is the kind of the psychological leverage you can get on players. This is an example of that, you know, making people feel that, you know, they could get things that are better or more awesome. You know, in the majority of cases, this is kind of rolled into the gameplay loop, but, you know, not unsurprisingly, this kind of, you're using psychology to make your shop window essentially look extra shiny and awesome. It's not that unsurprising that companies are starting to embrace this. And I agree, you know, this is something I find absolutely morally reprehensible. I'm very unlikely to, I tend not to play free-to-play games because I'm on old Git.
yes, you are.
And, you know, but it's very much, if it is just pure cosmetics, okay, but if it is like will give you a competitive advantage, even if it's like in a PvE leaderboard, for example, even if it's that, I still find that questionable. But the psychology behind it will drive people to make purchases.
To bring in a relevant example, to go back to EA, I've been playing EA's Galaxy of Heroes, the Star Wars game, for years now, and it's a free-to-play game that I have actually made purchases in. Not very much. I think I've spent, you know, £1.69 on like four
steady
occasions,
on,
I think, basically.
Steady on, Trump. Jesus.
But there are in-app purchases for that for £100. And you can skip the kind of grind in the game and just buy characters and buy ships and all that type of stuff. But for me...
Hey, I hear those are the best value as well.
Yeah, but as much as I am, I find that type of thing a bit offensive in the fact that they are definitely fishing for whales, and I don't like that in general. The actual structure of the game is structured in such a way that, yes, people could possibly pay that money to get ahead of me, but I could also spend time, unlock the characters that they've got, and be on equal footing with them through having not spent...
You could always have fun and play the game.
Yeah.
Get out of here, Coleman. Those kind of progressive views aren't welcome here.
Yeah, and so I don't mind that. This for me definitely crosses the line. And look, we have to say it with a slight pinch of salt because it's not something they've implemented yet. But I think it's important that people are rallying up and standing up and saying... no, this is something you cannot implement, otherwise we will kick off. Like, and I think that very much feels at the moment with microtransactions, a lot of people like Jim Sterling have been the canary in the coal mine that have been warning us this was a slippery slope.
Yep.
But I think we are at the line in the sand moment at the moment. I think we are in danger of crossing into a really dangerous territory which could actually harm... The general kind of appeal of AAA games to a wider audience.
All right, here we go. I'm just putting this out there, Tim. Yep. Would you rather a system such as this reared its ugly head in a 60-quid game, which is now that I know it's the RRP, not actually what it sells for, but it's the RRP. Would you rather that, or would you rather an extra £15 got put on the bottom line of every game?
Two things with that. there is already a system for doing what you're saying without having to raise the base price of the game. It's called DLC, and it seems that it's, because that's something that has been more ingrained in games, it's something that people are more open to of, okay, you will sell me more of the game afterwards.
And yeah, I think and don't that forget is a, tiered game releases that
yeah,
are currently...
That is a more honest system. The other approach, and one that I have been crying out for years, is to stop selling me a large portion of a game that I won't bloody play and charging me for the privilege of owning a large piece of content that then takes up a massive amount of disk space on my hard drive. If you've got a massive single player and multiplayer game, like, have the option to buy one or the other for like £40 and then possibly add the other bit on afterwards if you want, or sell it to me later down the line at a reduced price. But yeah, maybe you split the single player and multiplayer into two different things that you can buy for £40 each, or buy everything in one pack for £70, or that type of pricing structure type thing, right?
I think we should all just put down our gamepads, go to the window, stick our heads out, and yell, I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Yeah. But, I mean, this goes back years. Like, literally, when I was doing my comic for Sarcastic Gamer, I used to have, like, a running joke where EA and Activision were like actively trying to compete with each other to be the most evil corporation in gaming, basically, kind of thing. And it really feels like literally, like when one of them does crap, like close whistle, neck, Activision's like, hang on, hold my pint. you haven't seen nothing yet. Look at this microtransaction thing we're doing. It's just like, oh yeah, I just can't believe that they're trying to outdo each other. It's like they really want to be the worst company in America.
I
want to
be the very worst.
No, I think
worst.
They want to have the most money.
Money. That, yes, but
that's what
they
it
seem
is.
They seem to be determined to do it in the shadiest, most like horrible way to like really infect gamers with a spirit that goes against their company ethos and all that type of thing.
No, well, I mean, capitalism, man. Capitalism.
Yeah, a lot of people's problems with the video game industry are actually problems with capitalism, and it's just, it rears its ugly head in a way that you are engaged and interested with, and so that you see it in video games. But yeah, capitalism is often the problem.
The only way that you can stop this crap occurring in our games is to, you know, the only way you can protest is by not buying it.
Vote with your wallet and be outspoken. There's two ways to that.
Yeah.
It's all right saying vote with your wallet, but there are the hardcore that go for it. And if you're not making a noise, then you're not
exactly.
You know, you're not getting the word out there. Look at the Xbox One launch. Everyone wasn't happy about the whole always online and looked like it's cutting out second party games, all this kind of stuff. So,
I mean, they had to fire the dude who was the head of the Xbox division to get that part.
I mean, yes, but look at the amount of changes that happened pre-launch to post-launch.
Yeah.
And yeah, just be vocal. Don't threaten. Don't be a dick. Just be vocal. You know,
also,
voice your concerns and don't buy it.
Also, from a slight different, the kind of the other side of the coin to that, like, if you are a small company that has had a success with a game, and EA comes along and tries to buy you, perhaps think about the track record with closing companies. Mm. It is not good.
Although such deals tend to come with a rather large amount of money up front as a golden handshake.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what happens with the microtransactions that get implemented into Unravel 2.
Well, one other thing that we didn't mention. I don't know about you, I am really heavily worried about the future of BioWare.
Yeah, I think the writing is on the wall for them, sadly.
What's the name of the one they've got? Para something? It's not Paragon, because that's already out. I can't remember. Anyway,
this
the big game
they've
got
just talking about earlier.
Yeah, Anthem. It looks really interesting.
Yeah.
Anthem, that's it. That looks really good, but
that well-known word that contains the two syllables para.
Yeah, but I couldn't remember. Anyway, but
Pramphum.
Paranthem.
Paranthem. But it, like, if it wasn't for that at the moment, I can't see what else is keeping EA doors open apart from the fact that they're still selling a bit of
the huge stacks of money.
But BioWare doors open, or EA not just canning them at the moment. They seem to have had a massive brain drain out of BioWare, and I'm not saying that there's no talented people there, but all the kind of people that were visible. Like Mike Laidlaw is, that's one other thing we didn't discuss last week, but because I think it just happened just after we did the show, but Mike Laidlaw's leaving BioWare now. And he's one of the, you know, the massive leads behind.
Good job, didn't Laidlaw the point on his way out.
Dragon Age.
Oh, come on.
And I didn't get it. Sorry.
Not even a giggle for you? Like, don't labour the point on Laidlaw the point on.
I don't care.
Thank you, Coleman.
Funny.
No, it wasn't.
We have to move on.
Yes, we do.
Yes.
We've got 25 minutes of the show left.
Yes, indeed. So, the next bit is a lovely example of advertisements and implications gone mad, and this is in the context of a game having gone a bit mad. Now, I'm going to say this, I haven't picked up or played Gran Turismo Sport as of yet. However, I have.
I thought you were collecting all the driving games this year, Dan.
Yes, no, I'm just saving myself one. I mean, you know, if we do pick it up and play it, we'll talk about it more at length. But it's a game that, to put it mildly, has a number of very odd design decisions in it. Very odd decisions. But anyway, they've had to backtrack a bit on the VR mode, which is one of the real kind of tentpole things about Gran Turismo Sport, and could have been really, really cool to, you know, driving games plus VR equals happy times.
Yeah.
Unless you're Coleman, then you just vomit everywhere.
To be fair, this was a selling point for me on the game, but I also think it would have really helped push PSVR in general to other people that might not have picked it up.
Yeah. So to be clear, there is still VR in Gran Turismo Sport, but the implication was that such a mode was going to have loads of cars, and it was going to be just like playing normal Gran Turismo, but there's going to be loads of cars, it's going to be 3D and everything. But it turns out that I believe it's really kind of stripped back. All of the options, such as time conditions, have been gone, and you can only race against one other car in VR mode.
Yeah, no. Not only that, it's 1 degree worse than that. It's one other AI only. You cannot race against another human opponent, which is something that I didn't know from the demos that I'd seen, but I had kind of feared. They stripped it down to 1-on-1, and as I said, I reported when I played it at EGX, it looks really nice. Like, it's really good. It's obviously there is a sort of a slight graphical dip between the kind of, you know, general PS4 version and playing it on PSVR, but it wasn't as much of a dip as it was going with, say, Drive Club VR, basically. And it did look nice. It did look good. And playing it felt good as well.
Now, well, one of the real changes is because what Gran Turismo Sport is doing is one of the things they're really trying to push it is, like, this is, you know, actual proper competitive racing, like with the FIA getting involved and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The way, apparently there's a system where you can get very heavily penalised for, you know, not being aware of other cars around you, which is fine, but every now and again people will, because it's you're looking at a 2D visualization of a 3D space, it's difficult to do that. And that's where I thought, oh, great, well, PSVR would be really good for that. But the fact that you can't have it in online modes is a bit of a nail in the coffin for this. And, you know, it sounds like it's an interesting tech demo to show your mates, hey, look, I've got something VR. Whoa, look, cars, isn't that cool?
But that's what we've got Drive Club VR for, and that's much cheaper.
Well, but as I said, this is visually more impressive, and also, like, I don't know, it feels like the cars are a bit more fleshed out. It feels like, you know, a bit more care and attention is possibly the wrong phrase, but it just feels like there's a bit more to it in a graphical sense, and it feels a bit more kind of faithful to, you know, the recreation of the exact replica of that car and stuff like that, basically, which I, you know, most petrol heads would get a kick out of. But it just seems like it's such a limited thing that doesn't really, you know, give any replay value or reason to come back. Also, this is like, and the thing that was that was a bit scandalous was the fact that they had a trailer that was up that they kind of did a talking heads interview with a load of their GT Academy guys, basically, and they were talking about the VR mode, just the VR mode that they were talking about in this trailer, basically, and the footage that they cut to while they were talking to these people and while they, you know, they did the voiceover for it had multiple cars on the track at one time. You know, there were different shots of different things, but there was one where there was at least, you know, 8 or 9 cars on the track, sort of thing. And they seem to have pushed that trailer quite a lot before launch, and then post launch pull that trailer down when it was obviously attracting a bit of negative press. The whole thing also...
It's not the first time, though.
No, but it's just... It's a little bit shady to imply that... Yeah, no, but it's a bit shady to imply that and then only pull it post-launch. Like, they must have known for a good few weeks that this was going to be the case, and they possibly should have, like, been proactive in either not putting that trailer out at all or pulling it sooner, basically. Like, I do think that's a bit shady. But also, it's extra stupid when they've announced, at least in Europe, there will be a Sony, there will be a Gran Turismo Sports PSVR bundle where you also get like PSVR Worlds as well, VR Worlds as I think it's actually called, in there as well. And it was quite a good price. I think you got the camera in there as well, and the whole bundle was like $350, which aside from the fact that it looked like it's the older headset, is a pretty good deal.
And that's just a headset. That doesn't include a PS4, obviously.
No, that doesn't include the PS4, but that includes the headset, Gran Turismo, and the camera and world. So it's quite a good saving.
Well, you know, buy Grab Thar's hammer and all of that. But
what a saving.
But what a, I mean, saving. It's almost as if, you know, it's a kind of, Sony are quite cognizant that perhaps this is a bit of a gimmick. And, you know, I think VR is a really cool technology, but I think this generation of consoles isn't powerful enough to do it justice. I think PS5 and the Xbox 2...
You know I'm going to argue with that, but anyway...
We haven't got the time for you to argue.
It's just weird, because it seems like this was obviously a very last-minute decision to crank it down to one-on-one, and with no real explanation given of why. I mean, I understand that might be difficult for them to say, but yeah.
But hey, there is a console out there that is no way powerful enough to power VR, and that's a Nintendo Switch!
Yep.
It's had an update. It's 4.0, but 4.0.0.
That extra point naught, that's what gives it the power.
Yeah, why do you need... I can understand the point naught, but why do you need the extra point naught? Coleman, explain this to me!
Versioning.
No one just uses 0-1.
It's not a virgin, Coleman.
Just use a 0-1. That's
virgin.
What normal people do.
Fight me.
You can't have two decimal places. You can't have it, Coleman.
I can.
No,
so
you can't.
Nintendo. They Nintendo'd it.
Is it a Nintendo-like solution to counting?
Yes. They don't understand the internet or counting.
Jesus, Nintendo. Yep.
Or numbers.
Anyway, this is the big update that a lot of people have been waiting for on the Nintendo Switch since it first launched. This is the update that now allows you to transfer save files from console to console.
The fact that that wasn't there at all.
Oh my god. This is something that should have been in the 2DS 10 years ago. No, sorry, in the 3DS 10 years ago. Should have been.
Yeah, but there was ways around it. You could put your micro card into your hard to your PC, and then you could copy files over that way. But then there was a big chance you could corrupt your saves. Anyway,
nice.
The Switch has never had this functionality at all, and it's a big thing for people that maybe your friend has a Switch and you've started, mm-hmm. you know, maybe they've lent it for you for a bit and you're playing a game on there, and then you pick up your Switch and you're like, oh, I'll see if I can just transfer my save data of Breath of the Wild over to a new console, and you've not been able to. No, that's something that's happened to me, and now with me having a Switch, Tim's been playing my Switch, and I'm sure if he gets one, he'll want to transfer his saves over so he doesn't start all over again.
Yes, but is it locked to a Nintendo ID still? So can you move it from one console to another, but it's still locked to...
Does not say. But the thing is, you can have multiple users on your console.
Yeah.
Mm. So I'm assuming it's locked to the user.
Right.
I think it implied, because I signed up the other day, I think it implied that if I could only have my Nintendo ID and everything linked to that account, and if I moved which one was my, like, kind of base Switch, then it would move everything across, basically.
Yeah. So that's good.
Yes. That
excellent.
Is good. The next bit, yeah.
The other bit is you can now capture video, but woo-hoo! It's limited to 30 seconds
of
footage.
Not just that, it's limited to 4 games.
Yeah, currently.
They're rolling it out. Why is it limited to games in particular? Sure, it's a system level thing.
I think it might be. So you know when you're streaming on your straight from your PlayStation or your Nintendo or your Xbox, and it will go, "Hey, recording is blocked." You know, that kind of thing. I think it might be down to the developer publisher on what they want broadcast and what they don't.
Yeah, I think it's probably because they didn't think about that ahead of time and haven't got people that have programmed games to implement that into their games. Mm. So they'll have to do it from now on, by the sounds of it, on a game-by-game basis.
Wow, on a game-by-game basis. Jesus.
Proper Nintendo solution. Well done.
Oh, God.
Anyway, 30 seconds of video that's suitable for uploading to Facebook and Twitter. And it's a little bit similar to the little... You remember when you could do the little videos on Xbox before they started capturing like longer videos?
Oh, yeah.
And you could like stick them on your profile and stuff. I'm assuming it'd be a bit more like that. But anyway, 30 seconds of video capture.
But no streaming to Twitch, YouTube, Hitbox, whatever.
I don't think they'll ever let you stream
Justin.tv.
If you look at GeoCities. If you look at all the Nintendo VIP streaming program, well, not even streaming anymore, but the whole Let's Play programs where they take all your revenue and stuff, I don't think they're ever going to let you stream from their consoles.
No, no. Very true.
But being able to move your saves over, that's the
update
that everyone's been waiting
for. Well done, Nintendo.
Yay.
Well done, you.
Well done.
Well done. Right, well, that's about it for news, and we've rambled on a long time. So I'm going to be quick about what I've done played, because I haven't done played much of it, or as much as I would like. Like Coleman, I believe, I have been dipping my toe into the bubbling grog that is Shadow of War, Middle-earth Shadow of War, to give it a
spoil. By dipping my toe, it means I've bought it and have not had the time to play it yet.
Excellent. Well, I have bought it and had spent about 2 hours in it.
Okay.
It's Shadow of Mordor.
I've had this available to me through... Mr. Goldman's, but I haven't been at all inspired to play it. Can you tell me if I should?
Well, it's more Shadow of Mordor, which is great, and if you like Shadow of Mordor, this is a bit more of it. And the Nemesis system apparently is a bit fancier, but I haven't got far enough into it to really kind of push it to its limit.
Right.
I mean, straight away, I can tell you the plot is a load of old nonsense. If
yes,
you've in
I've heard
any way got any passing reverence for Middle-earth lore, just stick your fingers in your ears.
See, but that seems like a really bad misstep when you're only really going to sell this to people that think it, you know, are going to think highly of the lore kind of thing.
No, I don't think that's true. I had no interest in the first game at all until like I saw a load of stuff on YouTube and went, this looks awesome, I'm going to pick it up. Turns out they're all paid YouTubers, but hey. But for everyone that's kind of complaining about the big thing, there's a new ring, and it's in all the advertising and stuff, so it's not like a big spoiler. For all the people that I've read that are complaining about this, like, oh, they're putting a new ring, that's just stupid when you look at the mythology of Lord of the Rings. So those are all people that played the first game and didn't complete it, because they literally get to the end and go, we're going to make a new ring. And then that's when the second game starts.
Yep, pretty much.
I don't think many people completed the first game.
For some reason, Shelob, the big scary spider from
Is a sexy woman.
Turns
now.
Out to
sexy
be a
woman.
Hot sexy lady.
Hot sexy hot mama
sexy
spider.
Mama.
Have sex with a spider.
For reasons that just aren't explained at all. It's like, okay, right, fine. It would have been better if she just stayed as a big hairy-ass spider, but there we go. Perhaps that's my own proclivities coming to the fore.
Are you
there.
Saying you find spiders sexy, Dan?
Who doesn't?
Or, yeah, mate, they're amazing.
Legs for days, mate. Legs for days.
Legs on legs, mate.
Looks great in a spider bikini.
Yeah, buying shoes very expensive for them. That's all I say. But yeah, I will play it more and talk more about it next week.
Hooray! Good. I will try to play so we can both
talk about things with knowledge.
Who else is going to talk about things with knowledge?
I'm going to try and get through these three very quickly.
Okay, I'll just delete my two games.
Oh, no, I want to talk about at least one of yours as well. But Syndrome, I got a review code for because I was interested in the VR portion. It turns out you oddly have to play through a little bit of the base game to get into the VR mode, and the VR mode is a lot more restrictive. I don't know if this was the case, but it seemed to be that I don't know if this... people picked up on it being a VR game, and so that got spanned out by VR news sites and stuff like that. But it does seem that this game was delayed a little bit, and then the VR portion of it seems to have been possibly either scaled down, you know, in production, or just it was blown out of proportion and hyped up a bit too much. Like, It's a £35 game, which overall isn't massively expensive for the game, but we're in the VR space, that's a quite high price of entry.
That's like taking a kidney in the VR space.
Well, that's kind of, you know, your upper echelons of VR games, basically. And I think if you are, like me, mainly interested in the VR portion, it's a high price of entry for what it is, because basically the game is a set in space, survival horror type thing, first person shooter type mechanics, even though I haven't actually come across a game in the main a gun in the main game yet, but I have in the VR portion. But yeah, the VR portion is just generally a kind of survival mode where you're on the ship that I think it's the same ship as in the main game, but slightly different layout of equipment and stuff like that that's around you. As I said, you come across a gun much earlier and stuff like that, and a pistol and stuff. But it's a lot more atmospheric, because, and I don't know if they did this for reasons of like motion sickness and stuff, but you've got a very limited torch that only shines over a small area type thing. And for me, that just felt much more immersive and much more atmospheric, and actually played into the whole horror aspect of it a lot better anyway, type of thing, to the fact that I was like, well, they should have done a bit more of that in the main game, possibly, kind of thing. But yeah, it's basically literally just see how long you can survive wandering around the ship, picking up different items. It seems that the items and the stuff that you get are generally in the same place, or that there might be a slight variation to what's actually there, and to like how much ammo there is and stuff like that. But generally, all the stuff is in the same place. The layout of the ship's the same, but the placement of enemies is quite different. The enemies, I mean, Coleman saw me playing this, and okay, he was watching it on the social screen, so it was only one thing. But one enemy came out, and it was an enemy I hadn't particularly seen before, and it, like, I think, what was your comment, Coleman?
Tim was playing, and this weird, like, gangly, blocky character came out of the shadows, and I just went, God, this is like crap!
and it doesn't look quite as bad as it does on just the social screen, but let's say it's not graphically impressive. The main aspect, the kind of main game of this wouldn't necessarily have pulled me in without the VR content, and the VR content alone isn't quite worth the price of admission, which is a shame. I don't know if it's something they could roll out as a separate thing that they could do, but I can't recommend, if you're just going in for the VR, then I can't entirely recommend it. If you've got an interest in the main game and look into that and see if you do, then the VR does. It's another like nice tick in the box, but it's not something that you're going to play for hours and hours on end, I don't think. Moving on to another VR thing, which is instantly in my essential VR collection. Like, it's a must buy if you own PSVR, as far as I'm concerned. It's already a strong contender for one of my Game of the Year picks. And with all of those things, I want to step back a bit and just kind of do what I did to myself, and that's just temper expectations slightly. A game called Megaton Rainfall. Fantastic game. It's basically Superman without the pants and cape, basically, in VR.
Can you still turn back time by flying at the speed of light in the reverse direction around the world?
Haven't tried that yet, but haven't unlocked all my powers yet. Basically, it's something where it's at least primarily, I don't know if it's entirely, but primarily made by one person. It's only like, I think it's only about £12, £13. I picked it up for like when it was on pre-release sale, and it was like £10.99. And for that, it is a fantastic experience that I think you can play the game in non-VR. Well, actually, yeah, it mentions that you can, but I don't see the point in doing so. Like, it is a fantastic VR experience. Like, you can take off from the surface of the Earth, or even underneath, like, the ocean type thing, but take off from the surface of the Earth, fly out into space. Eventually you get a power, and basically as you play through each different mission where you're defending the Earth from intruders, and basically
let's call them aliens,
but no, they're referred to as intruders. You don't necessarily know they're aliens, but it's Earth, and it's a kind of Earth that's been realistically rendered, but it's kind of procedurally generated cities. If you're in a city, like, you will notice a couple of like landmark buildings, or just general landmarks in the environment. Like in Dubai, for instance, there's the massive tall tower thing that I forget the name of, and the that kind of weird island formation that's a man-made island thing that's like a palm tree type thing. So there's that type of thing. In other towns, there'll be like, you know, national monument type things that you'll recognize, basically. But yeah, most of the rest of the city is this like, hey, this is generic city thing. There's the like housing over here with streets and what's that. But there's like traffic and people and all that, but they're not exactly like highly well rendered, but they're all kind of there. And basically you're defending against these big kind of robot monstrosities that have got these like weak points that you've got to shoot with your different powers. But as I said, each level that you progress, you get like bigger and bigger powers. And like there's one power, it's like, aim this upwards, because if you aim it down towards a city, you'll destroy the whole city. Like, I very much more appreciate the whole Superman taking down the bad guy problems from, like, was it Superman Returns? Yeah, with... No, which was the one where he destroyed a city taking down Zod?
Superman... that might have been Superman Returns, where they basically gave the city health instead of Superman, because he's Superman.
Well, I meant more film than game.
Oh,
basically.
Oh, that was the Man of Steel.
Movie. Man of Steel. That yeah, like I understand his problem entirely for that now, because I'm like, look, I may have just killed a whole building full of people, but I kind of had to. Like, they were going to kill a whole city block, so I kind of, you know, what do you want? But anyway, but yeah, you get these increasingly like different powers and stuff like that. And one of the powers it does, it goes, right, your speed has now increased from Mach 8 to 3 trillion times the speed of light. And you're like, oh, okay. And at that point, it takes you on a journey around the universe and goes, right, this is some of the things you can do, follow me type thing. And you fly through the rings of Saturn, like Cassini style, and like land on the surface of the sun and like all these other things. And like I landed on the moon, did my big power thing and made a massive crater in the moon. I was like, that's amazing. But yeah, it's one of those things where, as I said, like temper expectations slightly, because it's on a... It feels like a massive grand scale, but it's kind of, you know, focused kind of thing. But it's really weird, because the base gameplay of actually fighting the intruders, I sometimes find quite infuriating. Like, it can be annoying. But the actual... It's a bit trial and error with what you're doing to, like, fend off the enemies, basically, and finding their weak points and stuff like that. But... I just carry on wanting to play it because I want to unlock all the different powers and I want to see everything the game has. And it's one of those things where I'm really hoping they'll add DLC and kind of flesh a few more things out. But I was expecting to like the mechanics of it. I wasn't expecting to be as intrigued by the background story and everything that they've presented around that, because that was something I didn't really see in the trailers and stuff. But yeah, it's one of those things that you're like, if you've got VR, you have to get this game, because you just have to experience these things, because it's kind of like, this is, for me, kind of the things that prove why VR should exist, basically.
When you were just saying, kind of traveling all throughout the solar system and the universe, I was secretly hoping, is this the VR resurrection of Nobi Nobi Boy?
It feels a bit more like...
Does anyone know where Girl has got to now?
I'm not sure where she's got to.
I'm going
to
check.
It does feel a bit more like Superman does No Man's Sky, but in a like slightly less populated planet way, but still in more fun way type of thing. Cool. But yeah, I really can't recommend it highly enough. But as I said, with slight tempered expectations for, you know, the limits of what it is, it's fantastic. Also, South Park: The Fractured Butthole has started really strongly.
And FYI, Tim, you've got a very poor idea of what the word quick means.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, so your other game, I'm afraid you're going to have to save till next week.
Yeah, but just nope. To say South Park: nope. The Fractured Butthole has started really strongly. I laughed out loud before I even got to the like the opening sequence of the game.
Well, that's
it
good.
Even
that's
started,
something you should save for next week and tell us about then.
Yes, I will do so.
Yeah, if you want to talk about it, you need to make nothing short of Timothy.
Yarr.
Yeah. So think
Which
on
is
that.
A shame, because I wanted to hear about Coleman's games. As
yes,
well,
but you didn't, because you... No, could you speak quickly? No, did you promise you would? Yes.
I tried.
1 minute left.
1 minute left. Okay, so there's no Great British Debate because Tim.
entirely my fault.
Yeah, and Tuesday's a Tuesday. Tell us about the Tuesday on the Tuesday on the 24th of October, which is a Tuesday.
This coming 24th of October, and indeed every Tuesday, we have a new feature game, and if you play that feature game that evening, you have a chance of winning a copy of that game at the end of the night. This week's feature game is a little fun kind of party... I say party game, but it's party game. I think it's just like four people. I might be wrong on that, but it's a little game called HMS Dolores. And it's quite fun. It's about kind of messing around with the people that are next to you and stuff. But yeah.
That's definitely a party.
Yeah, it's definitely your kind of party. Bunga bunga party, maybe.
No, what?
But no, it's not that type of party.
What?
But you can come along, play a game with some nice
Berlusconi.
People.
Where the hell did that
possibly,
come from?
Possibly win yourself a copy of HMS Dolores. So come down, join us at Loading Bar in Dalston. Oh, while we're on that subject as well, this very weekend is the opening of the new Loading Bar, their actual side quest, as it's called, bar in Brighton on the seafront down there. It's a bit more of a kind of games cafe type thing, basically. But you can get alcohol there as well, which is good for the party things. But basically, I believe this Saturday is ticketed and all sold out. But as of this Sunday, it is open for business to the public. So feel, you know, pop along there from Sunday onwards and go say hello.
Splendid. You should do that if you if you're in the area. So anyway, that is your lot. We've got to get out of here because Colin has to get out of here. Fun fact.
Yeah.
There's only one shout out, I'm afraid, but it is an awesome shout out, and it's from me, and it's to do with Extra Life. As we all know, Extra Life is coming up, and you all need to have to look. The Ferner is what I was going to say. Yeah, that's what you should do.
Good.
BRB is, as always, part of Extra Life. There will be a post outlining who out of staff's getting involved, how to follow them, how to watch their streams on the day whenever they do it. but already, before all of that shenanigans has started off, I've already had a $100 donation.
Nice.
From the very awesome Les Evitts. And I just want to say thank you very much, Les. Really, truly appreciated.
Yes.
And,
nice and
put a proper smile on my face.
And I want to say thank you to Diarmaid for sending me $15.
Yay!
Hey.
I'm not sure anyone sponsored me so far.
Have you signed up, though, Tim?
I have.
Really?
Yeah.
Sure?
You might want to check. Diarmaid may have sponsored you. He sponsored everyone.
Okay. I have not received an email confirming that was the case, which usually happens.
Fair enough. So, but anyway, head on to www.extra-life.org and find out all the goodness, and we'll be speaking about it in a bit more depth, no doubt, next week. Right, that's it.
Yeah.
I don't think we've got anything else to talk about. So, Tim, who have you been?
I might have been Tim.
Yes, and Coleman, who have you been?
Definitely been Coleman.
Yeah, you have, and I've been Dan. So that's your lot. Thanks ever so much for listening. And until next time, dear listeners, toodle bye.
Your ears are quite welcome
for the podcasting goodness that you just heard.
Why not roll on over
to BigRedBarrel.com
for more podcasts,
news, reviews, and videos from the biggest, reddest site on the internet, BigRedBarrel.com.